Now back to the Green Architects Lounge.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Green Architects Lounge podcast.
Are we back already, Chris?
We're back. Welcome back, Phil.
Thank you.
It's good to be back. We're talking about pretty good house concept, sure. slash book, slash guideline, slash whatever, Frankenstein monster that has been given life somehow by the internet and is now rambling around, causing trouble, bumping into things. And
it's a beautiful monster, Chris.
It is. Well, yeah. It's one of those things we got to rein in, or else everyone's going to grab their pitchforks and torches, or they're going to do something else.
Well, can I tell you something that I've been processing since we've done our first part?
Yeah. Yeah.
The Pretty Good House... I just recently finished up an interview with some potential clients.
Yeah.
I'll end up, they didn't end up hiring me. Essentially, they had seen my name and heard what I do. Mm-hmm. They were in the middle of the process of designing a house. They had done some sketches.
Yeah.
They wanted to build in a subdivision, which means they basically have to use a certain builder, and the builder's got a drafts person.
I see.
I said, why don't you bring your sketches in? So they did. They sketched up their thoughts of the house. They brought it to the drafts person. They drafted it up.
Mm-hmm.
And made what, it into a real house.
Turned their sketches right into...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
And then started... When they asked, well, is this a good house? The drafts person said, well, this isn't my house. This is your house. Well, what do you suggest? Well, I suggest that I will do whatever you want to do. You need to sign something that says this is your house and your design and not mine. And they got really kind of... You know,
nervous
about it.
Yeah,
why did they get nervous?
Heck yeah.
So they gave me a call.
Yeah.
And I looked at the house. I met with them, really nice folks.
Mm-hmm.
Expensive house. Big house, shockingly expensive. It was like $200 a square foot, right?
Okay.
So it not that expensive in cost per square foot, but it was a 4,000 square foot house, big house.
Oh,
so this is an $800,000 house.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm looking at this house and I'm saying, all right, this is not only is it 2x6 walls with fiberglass.
Oh, man.
Yep. But it was so incredibly inefficient. I mean, I'm looking at 8-foot hallways, 8-foot floors that they just couldn't resolve. And
you're like, I can help you.
I can help you. I was like, this is a 3-bedroom house. People, I can make this same even better.
Oh yeah.
For 3,000 square feet, I can shave off 25% of this house.
Yeah, you're gonna save them $100,000, $200,000. You're gonna save them.
And you know, and what's my fee? Certainly not that. You know, not even half of that.
No.
But so I punched the numbers. Like, just by hiring me, I'm telling you that I can give you much, much better house than this quality wise and more efficient.
Yeah.
And I talked all about energy efficiency and solar heat, solar gain and thermal bridging and really that this house is going to be obsolete in 10 years, if not 5,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, the second is...
So I came out pumped and inspired and they ultimately decided they were just going to stay the course. It was just too much. And I really wished I had the ammo. If I was smart then and just said to them in the eye, Chris... That you have $800,000 you're spending on a house that is not a good house. If you could just get a pretty good house,
nice.
It would make all the difference. If this was just this is not a pretty good house.
Wow. See?
If I just used those words, I really honestly believe it would have made a difference.
That's an awesome story, Phil.
Yeah, yeah. And it just... You know, you come out of those things just so jazzed, so pumped. Like, I've made a difference. I'm going to help these people. And you don't think about getting the job or making the money. You really just think, I've done the right thing. I've just fixed this before it was another just disaster.
But they didn't go with you.
They didn't go that way. So if there was a book they could read, man.
It would be this one.
It would be
that
pretty good.
That doesn't exist yet.
And it just needs. There's just something that needs to be out there.
Yeah.
There's so many people. I don't know about you, Chris, but there's so many people. You referenced it before. The Not So Big House. Who read it? That's on the top of their list. We read this, and we want this.
Yeah.
Kind of
How many clients have come in with that tucked under their arm?
Most.
Exactly.
Right.
And they kind of gotten some inspirado. Their thoughts have been organized, mm-hmm. and they now know what they want. And that's like the hardest part. Like a lot of this. green stuff, I'm using air quotes, you know, is atomized, you know, it's just like, mm-hmm. it's all put into its own little specific categories, it's all over the web, it contradicts itself, you know, often.
Just like you and I do.
Exactly. No, I don't. Yeah, we do not.
Yes, we do.
No, we don't.
Yeah, no, we don't. No, we do pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, we started to find pretty good house, and I really think, let's keep going with this.
Yeah, where did we leave off? We were talking about the envelope, and then next, I think, would be on the list is materials. Because your house is being made of something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a pretty good house is going to really favor, you know, local manufacturing, local mm-hmm. products. I know that becomes a big thing here for you and I.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I know almost instantly what's local and what's not. Mm-hmm. You know, like Eastern White Cedar or something like that. You know, like mm-hmm. Eastern White Cedar shingles. That's, to me, that's like one of the greenest materials there are to side your house in
right.
here.
Right.
That's maybe not the case in New Mexico. You
right.
know, in fact, it's not.
Right.
You know, so it's like, there's so many local products and local systems that are going to be right. And so, and you're helping a local economy. There's bigger concepts at mm-hmm. play there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stay all local is good.
Right. I'm sort of fascinated by that because you find people who are really into local even more than they are into energy.
Mm-hmm. They are. I think it has to do with sometimes their jobs, they realize, are... you know, based on the fact that people are buying local, you know, whether it's a farmer's market or whether it's, you know, whatever retail, you know, pick whatever retail, mm-hmm. you know, choosing something that's local as opposed to a big box or, mm-hmm. Or a store or something bigger like that. It makes a difference to them. So they immediately equate that to their own regional economy. It's kind of a nice awakening that we're having as a, mm-hmm. as a country. In terms of materials, you know, saving materials, being resource efficient, a pretty good house is going to do that. There's some benefits.
Is this advanced framing you're
talking Well,
about?
Yeah, I think the advanced framing will probably, you know, be located in the envelope part of this discussion, but in a way it'll also appear on the materials in terms of saving materials, you know. And if you can do 24 inches on center, if you can align your joists and rafters and studs,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to having all, you know, you can eliminate the double plate, you can eliminate headers altogether.
Mm-hmm.
It's efficient framing. You can, you know, see that sort of thing. And you know, to have a builder who's like, efficient framing, what's that? That's embarrassing, you know?
Yeah.
At this point, this stage, it is. And
the thing that kills me is that if the builders were just able to think about it, they could probably charge the same and pay less for their own materials.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I mean, what it comes down to is there's head scratching involved. It'd be easier just to strap on the belt, go out there, and just slap it together.
Mm-hmm.
But if you strap on the belt and go, wait a second, this is the wall, this is the, you know, whatever. Wouldn't it be cool if the drawings, someone actually, you know, drew,
yeah.
planned them out? That's mm-hmm. great too, but mm-hmm. that costs money. Someone's got to think it through. So you're either going to pay the builder, you're going to pay the architect. Someone's going to design your house, you know, or not. And
well,
that's
thinking,
gonna be bad.
Thinking is only expensive the first time.
That's right. And it's and the more times you have to do it on the same topic, it's exponentially more expensive.
That's right.
So you know, that efficient framing goes towards waste reduction as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so let's not fill our landfills with construction waste, for God's sakes. I mean, we can manage this stuff. I mean, it can be done, and you know, the builders we're used to, Phil. I mean, they do it. They just manage their waste. They're mm-hmm. they're you know, trying not to fill landfills and they're recycling things. And but you go to any other job site, you know, and it's not that. There's a dumpster and everything gets tossed in it and that goes to a landfill. Or, you know, builders take it home and burn it, you know.
Right.
Which happens. On that note, you know, toxins are also going to be a topic that, you know, pretty good house is actually going to give a crap about what goes in your house.
Well, I mean, especially if you're talking about the air tightness levels.
Exactly.
We've been talking about.
Right. And we've mentioned that before on podcasts. The tighter your house gets, the more important it is to actually understand what you're bringing into your house. You bring carpet in. I mean, pretty good house is going to be kind of anti-carpet, like you and I are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just, you know, a stat I always like to throw out there is, you know, the average carpet when it's thrown out is 3 times heavier than when it was brought in.
Ooh, really?
Yes.
That's disgusting.
It is disgusting. you think about the colonies of dust mites and just the filth that you live with, but you don't realize it because it's buried under the carpet. It's just under the carpet. Who cares? You don't see it. You snuggle up in the carpet and yeah. I'm just.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love that stat.
I know. I do too. I've got kids with allergies and I just houses that don't have carpet. I mean, I understand there's a time and place for carpet and, you know, whatever, but I'm anti-carpet. And but also there's a VOC component to it. Mm-hmm. You know, that new carpet smell, that's not good for you. Yep. So along with most building smells are not good for you, which is sad because I like most of them. But like things like formaldehyde, I mean, in the past 5 years, we've seen a huge revolution, I think, in, I mean, I can get cabinetry that is UFF free, is no added urea formaldehyde to it, and it's an easier thing to do than it used to be, and there'll be a whole discussion about, you know, there's formaldehyde, there's VOCs in paint and carpet, and even joint compound has it, but you know, that's
UFF. Chris, tell me about it. Is that like a Star Trek thing?
No, yeah. I belong to the UFF and you will be assimilated. No, urea formaldehyde free.
Yeah.
You'll see that often on, it's like the slang. It's a thing now.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful that it is. Likewise, you know, we haven't seen this catch on very much, but embodied energy, we talk about that in terms of a lot of times it's transport. You know, your mahogany is beautiful, but it, you know, had to
comes from far away
and you know, but there's a balance there,
right? I find that one tends to be a little more ephemeral. It's hard to really
one's
writing that metric down,
right? Let's say aluminum. Phil, aluminum is like probably the highest embodied energy material that we have at our disposal. If it's cladding a window, I give it a pass because it's this very thin piece that is there for, you know, a century to resist the weather. But when you're using it in railing systems, and I'm thinking bigger buildings now, but, you know, like it's extremely high in embodied energy, and so it tends to fall in the evil category, and you need to minimize that. Much like PVC, which is toxic to make, dispose of, and difficult to recycle. Aluminum, which is very easy to recycle, though, is extremely resource consuming and energy consuming to produce. So try to not use aluminum, people. Same way with like fiber cement is high in embodied energy. Do you know that? It's a lot of people sort of
because there's so many other advantages to it. So
exactly. So it's a balance.
All these funny trade-offs. You know.
Yeah. Same way with
copper.
Copper, yeah.
Copper lasts forever, right?
It sure does. So, yeah. Lead. Yeah, no, don't use lead. Don't use lead anymore. But I honestly saw a green brochure about lead roofing, and I'm like, what? Let's let our kids lick the lead roofing, and, you know, no, let's not.
What are your kids doing on the roof in the first place?
I don't know. Kids, get down. Get down, kids. I'll get your Frisbee. No, and then, along with materials, we're talking about life cycle analysis. If you can, a pretty good house is going to consider the end life of the building. What's the end game, Phil? I'm sorry, but everything's finite, and it's okay. It's good that things are finite. You feel better, you know, than knowing that things aren't infinite. You know, it's everything has an end, and that so that makes it okay.
Cause
So your building, one day, will fail, and how will it fail, and where is it all going to go?
This is sort of the cradle-to-cradle mentality, Chris.
Exactly. I mean, there are some things that, you know, and this is something you're going to consider in your pretty good house. You're not going to, and it's going to be nebulous and really hard to monitor. You know, it's just like one of those things you need to be educated about and know that it's a metric in your decision-making. You know, I think of an American window versus a European window, like, you know, like European window with one tool, you can instantly turn that thing into a pile of aluminum, wood, and glass, and those things can be disposed of where they need to go, and gaskets and tapes and plastics. You take an Anderson or a Marvin window,
right,
that goes in the dumpster because you're not taking anything
there's
apart.
No way.
No, you can maybe remove the glass. In fact, you can remove the glass, but you know that PVC is adhered to that wood, which is adhered to all the comparisons.
Right, because they just want to make sure it doesn't leak.
Right.
They're not thinking about the end game.
They're not thinking about the end game, so everything has an end game. All right, let's move on to
materials.
Mechanicals. All right.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, so how are the mechanicals different in the Pretty Good House?
Well, they're not different.
Okay.
It's just what are we considering,
mm-hmm.
Phil? We're going to consider, of course...
Do you go out on a limb and say no fossil fuels?
No.
Okay.
No, we don't do that. You'll go out there and say, fossil fuels, you're going to consider, the greater impact of your choice, but I don't think it's going to go that far.
There's no mandates.
That's the beauty of this thing. It's like, here's all the information. Here's all the education that you need to consider things and weigh, and the decision's yours. So these are the guiding principles.
I like this. No shaming.
There's no shaming. There's educating, and then you decide, and then we'll judge you later. No,
that sounds.
But primary.
Very democratic. Not very snooty.
Not too snooty.
Sounds like a builder came up with it, not an architect.
Well, that's the thing. Like a lot of this is, it's a room full of architects, builders, energy dudes, insulators.
That's right.
And window salesmen. And material salesmen, it's like, people have been plugged into this stuff forever. So it's like, and they're all passionate about it, and they're all aiming towards the same thing but not the exact same thing. So that's the squishiness.
The beautiful composite spirit of people who are passionate about, in general, the same direction.
Right. So the primary thing with mechanicals, of course, is comfort, right? First, you need to deliver comfort to your house, and there's going to be some discussion about that, and most people understand that, but there's efficiencies of comfort, and that has to do with how you orient your building, putting a point source heat, in a super tight, super insulated building, you better be smart about that point source heat.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're going to blast one room and everyone can't stand to be in there while everyone in the bedroom freezes. So
that's right. And somebody's going to wear jackets
right
to bed at night and take great pride in the fact that they've only got one heater in the entire house.
Oh, man. And we talked about that, the comfort of the American versus the comfort of, let's say, the German.
Mm-hmm.
Their range is much greater than ours.
Yeah, but their blood is a different temperature, I understand.
That's completely different. It's green. No.
It's 92.6, I believe.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's colder than ours. Yeah. Yeah, and then, of course, with mechanicals, is performance. We'll talk about the performance and efficiencies and the many different options. And we've had, the podcast on that whole subject. And then, of course, we're going to need some help. We're going to need people. There's different climates. So there's going to be a whole chapter on air conditioning, which, I'm oblivious to.
What's that?
I don't know. What do you mean air conditioning? No, dehumidifying, you mean? No, actually cooling. No. And then likewise, we'll get into renewables, Phil. That's going to be a whole big mess of, lots of things to talk about in terms of the many different types of renewables and whether or not you do them and how efficiently they go on and the metrics involved. And so a Pretty Good House is going to consider using renewables or being prepared to use renewables in the future. Plumbing, water efficiency, that's really important for some climates. Denver, for example, out west, mm-hmm. having water efficient fixtures, that is a big deal. Out here, We especially if you have a house where there's a well and a septic system on your own site,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, who cares whether I'm saving 1 gallon or two? You're more concerned about the amount of energy your pump uses as opposed to the actual water consumption, because it's all cyclical
right.
on
right.
site. It's just a totally different world. It's a regional thing. All right. Are you bored yet? I'm sorry. I'm trying to keep it light.
Oh, I'm bored. I've got questions. I don't want to go out
hit
of order
me
for
the
you.
Questions. No, that's. I feel like I'm.
What
just
does
like,
Pretty Good House say about renewables?
Well, it's gonna talk about how. Well, and we've talked about this. How mm-hmm. We're at sort of this point
mm-hmm.
in time where renewables are becoming affordable, and by affordable I mean compared to fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
they're starting to make sense as from a financial standpoint, as opposed to just a let's do good for the environment.
Particularly in different parts of the country, like in Connecticut and New York, where you're paying 19, 20 cents a kilowatt hour.
Mm-hmm.
Here we're paying 15, and
or like
different parts of the South, they're paying 11 for residential. Yeah, 10,
Wyoming,
maybe.
6, if I remember right from my little
Canada
chart.
Is around that.
Yeah, so. But the bigger overarching thing is you need to know that they're out there and that they can be beneficial now, and they can be beneficial in the short term, and they're definitely beneficial in the long term. And even if you don't do it now, you ought to plan for it,
Mm-hmm.
While I'm on the subject of, I'm moving towards electrical stuff.
Yes.
Start putting a 220 volt outlet in every garage, Phil, that you do.
Okay. For charge your car.
Charge your car.
We don't do that, Chris.
Do it, Phil. My God.
Damn it, man.
I've got an electric car, and man, wouldn't it have been great if some dude had just...
Why don't we do that?
I don't know. Because we're all going to start...
Do that when we think about it. We're going to start doing that.
Five years ago.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad I can help. I wish whoever designed my house put that in. Because I got to...
We're always running a conduit to the roof for renewables.
Exactly. It's that exact same thing. You're running conduit to the roof. You're getting ready for renewables because it's easy to do while you're building the house. And then you're running a 240 volt outlet to the garage for mm-hmm. car charging.
That's good. What else is on the list?
Well, in the electrical, you're doing energy efficient fixtures. Of course, LEDs are sweeping the, are new and out there and hitting the residential market now. Or compact fluorescents.
Mm-hmm.
You want to, a lot of this, of course, is owner and occupant behavior. I'll get to that later, though, but you want to be aware of things like phantom loads and appliances and Energy Star and all that jazz.
Mm-hmm. But how do we, is there how do we make sure these houses are performing the right way? Is that a big part of it?
It is. Yeah, a pretty good house is going to have some measure for verification.
Okay.
Now, whether that's you're doing Energy Star and you're doing the inspections,
mm-hmm.
or in a final certification at the end,
mm-hmm.
or maybe you're going so far as to doing home energy monitoring. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get more of that into my houses. I'm having a hard time convincing clients to do that.
It's surprisingly tricky, isn't it?
It is, and I almost want to start doing the what Michael Chandler does, where he just does it,
mm-hmm.
and then he's doing it for himself. Mm-hmm. He's monitoring his own projects, and then when he shows his clients how awesome it is that how he's able to monitor their house, and they're like, oh my gosh, you're awesome, you know what my house is consuming and all that jazz, and then he can just say, well, do you want me to leave it hooked up, or you want me to just take it with me, after a year. And they almost always say, yeah, well, leave it. I'll pay for it, whatever. Mm-hmm. I may have just put some words in his mouth, but I think I remember him saying that.
Well, it's pretty great. It's funny is that, from our perspective, an architect, we definitely don't want to be the kind of architect that just design it and walk away.
Right.
But it's really, it's a tricky thing to be there and to follow up and to do it on a regular basis. And, For us, I think it feels a little different. The builder's already spending money on materials that go in the house.
Yeah.
We just do service. We're the service guys. We don't do the stuff.
Right.
And so is it time for us to buy some stuff to kind of put our money where our mouth is?
I don't know.
We've
talked about that, and it's one of those things where we're still in the phase where we're trying to convince clients to do it, where we think it's in their best, our clients who are energy conscious and want to know. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest the hiccup that we have is they say, well, we'll see what our energy bills are, and but that's a little different, That's mm-hmm. you don't pinpoint what goes wrong when you do that. You don't know how it's wrong. You can, there might be timers that are off. There might be times during certain points of the year, or certain days, certain mm-hmm. points of the day where things are spiking or things are wrong or things are dropping, and there's. And there's another component of monitoring, like Paul Eldrenkamp has done. You put little monitors in the sheet, within the wall.
In the walls, and you just leave them there.
And the moisture monitors, so you mm-hmm. know if you have a condensation problem,
mm-hmm.
Or if there's a failure in the exterior envelope, and there's the moisture level just goes up. or it's fine. And if it's fine, you're pretty much done until something goes wrong there. And you have a monitor that's going to tell you. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic, you know? So, and it's all wireless now. You know, it's in the wall and it's done. It'll be there for, you know, a decade or so, giving you data. And
until we find out the wavelengths are giving us cancer. Then we got to go in and remove those.
Right. And that's item number 11 is cancer prevention. No, but... So, you know, having verification in terms of either audits or inspections or monitoring or even programs that make you do it. And then I'm getting to the end here, Phil. I think I'm wrapping up with topics. I know there's been a lot, but
I mean, this is all really wonderful. How do you do with the cost thing? We just finished doing I'm maybe taking you off track. I'm not sure.
Well, no, I think that's a good.
You know, we talked about affordable green.
Yeah.
Now, where do pretty good houses sit in the realm of affordability?
I don't know. I mean, a lot of that. I mean, it's sort of like every one of these measures, like when we talked about the design, you know, being efficient in shape and size and all that. It's sort of like akin to that, and same with. Being smart about your mechanicals and cost offsets and whatnot, but there's really nothing I think in the, you know, that could change, you know, but I don't think there's anything in there that says you know there's a certain price per square foot you'd aim for that a pretty good house aims for. But that's interesting, Phil. I mean, there might be between now and then, and especially since you brought it up.
Yeah, so. Maybe. I mean, you know, we're talking about responsible design across the board. I'm not quite sure what that means.
Right.
I mean, I think without a doubt we're talking higher quality.
This is a higher quality house.
They're more comfortable homes. They're higher quality homes.
But are they $800 a square foot? No. But if someone wants to, you know, have gold-plated, you know, hardware and,
yeah,
you know, if they want
like
it.
Your house.
Yeah. My wife is listening to this. What? No, but if they decide they want to heat their garage for their Bentley, you know, or they want to, you know, have their, you know, three-story atrium for their pool that is, you know,
Right.
Does a pretty good house have an indoor pool? Probably not, but, you know, I don't think that's going to be in the guidelines or anything like that, you know, so.
Right.
You know. Indoor bowling alley, that's a different story.
You know, there's just this beautiful elegance to it, and, you know, this sort of lack of shaming to it. But just read and get smart, and you'll want to do the right thing. You really will, because it's what's going to make investment and a better place for your family.
I think the only guidelines are really going to be on the return on your investment, you know, and I think it's going to be sort of like item per item. So it's not.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Well, yeah. I think you could go ahead and blow the budget on your materials and stuff that you know your imported, you know, marble from, you know, Turkey that you know you sent your cousin over to pick out personally, so you get just the right ribboning and the. Yeah, I mean that would, you know, fall under other categories of, you know, resource efficiency and blah blah blah. So I think there is a return on investment. Part that it's gonna be talked about in terms of mechanicals and that sort of thing, but I don't think there's gonna be an overarching budget kind of a discussion, because I think in time is gonna change those numbers anyway. So
yeah,
market. The only other big thing I think.
Yeah.
And this is one that we banted about a lot is how do you control the occupant. Because if there's one cog in the wheel that can spring out and ruin everything, is an owner or an occupant who's just crazy and decides, yeah, I'm going to crank the heat and I'm going to open up the windows because I like fresh air.
Well, I was going to suggest electric shock.
Yeah.
Right? But then, you know, that would be a put a strain on your renewables.
Yeah, I guess it would, yeah.
Right.
Is there a more energy efficient way? Or a more, can we hit them on the head with a hammer?
Right, a club, yeah. The old school.
Right. But I think it all comes down to, like, you know, a pretty good house's owner is going to be aware of certain things and certain behaviors. And I think they're going to have, you know, I think a pretty good house is going to have a good owner and operation manual. It may be a good way to transfer that education on how, you know, there are so many, how many homeowners out there don't know how to change their air filters for their furnaces, or they do, but they don't. You know, that's like the classic, you know, air filter. And same with ERVs. I mean, we have clients that we've talked to, you know, a couple of years after their project and say, hey, have you changed your ERV filter? Oh, yeah, we did once. You know, it's like, well, mm-hmm. you know, we talked about that, you know, back in when we did, you know, way back. And but it's one of those things, you know, it's like owner education. You got to make that part of your.
Right. You know how we say that, you know, there's no such thing as net zero homes, only net zero clients.
Yes.
Net zero owners. Is it fair to say that you can't have a pretty good home, a pretty good house without a pretty good homeowner?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the pretty good, then that's the key. Is we need to make some pretty good homeowners, and I think then they in turn will make pretty good builders, because they're going to be asking for it. Because right now it's like it's all supply and demand. The supply is out there, mm-hmm. and people, builders build what sells, and people buy what is offered. That's and right. The people who come to us are the ones who don't want any of that, and they want something different. And it's time that everyone starts asking for that something different, that something special.
Well done, Chris. I'm all inspired. Right.
Oh, me too.
All right, so I got a hot zig.
Yeah, hit me.
Want to hear this?
Yes.
And this is something that I thought about ever since the Pretty Good House concept came on.
Yeah.
The Pretty Good Guild.
Pretty Good Guild. Oh,
the
Builders
Pretty Good
Guild.
All right. Builders and Architects Guild. Sign your name to the guild to commit to only doing pretty good houses. This is what I do. So people can come and find the people who are doing the right thing.
Wow.
You make a commitment. It's the same thing. Do you submit to anybody? Can you be deceiving somebody if you wanted to?
Yeah,
you could.
Probably.
You could. So maybe there's some metric, but I'm not sure.
But I don't think so. I think it's like, no, I like that idea, Phil, because then, like, if you're a builder who's like read this book or subscribed to this theory and just say, yeah, I know all that stuff. I love that stuff. That's what I want to do. Yeah. I want to do that stuff. It's a great way for them to say, I want to do that stuff. And then that homeowner's like, I want to build that like that. And then they'll connect them, a little matchmaking.
Well, guess what? You know, I think if you're a builder and you sign up your name, you're going to need to talk intelligently about it to these clients. Just
right.
Even if you're just pretending to do it. But guess what? Once you read it, once you understand this stuff, you're going to be sucked in. You're going to realize it's the way of the future.
Yeah, so, that's exactly right.
So I just don't... I think the gaming of this will be limited. I think the people will... The builders and the vendors will seek this information out and want to sign on a lot easier than saying, all right, I'm going to take a LEED certification exam to prove to somebody. I think this is a softer way, and it can come from sort of, you know, these heart-based beliefs of, We're going to change the world. We're going to do it the right way versus we're going to try to make money and earn badges.
Totally. Yeah, this is aimed at the status quo, at a large market. This is aimed for.
Pretty Good Guild. Let's work on that one next.
All right. I like it, Phil. All right, dude.
Want to hear some music?
I do. I think I'm done talking. I'm ready to listen to some. Give me something upbeat, dude.
Oh, you know Nico Case?
I love Nico Case.
I love Nico Case. I have never met anybody anyone who likes any genre of music say, you know, I don't really like Nico Case.
Yeah, she's annoying. No one, you're right.
Yeah, no one dislikes because
she's... Many ages, too. Yeah.
That's right.
Young, old.
Yeah, she's...
whatever you and I are.
She's got this thing. I think she's spectacularly talented.
Yeah, great voice.
Great voice. She was in the New Pornographers, a Canadian band, for many years.
Yeah.
Kind of got her start there, and she's really made her own way in the world. She's got an album that, when this comes out, it's a relatively new album. It is called, you ready for this? The Worse Things Get, The Harder I Fight. The Harder I Fight, The More I Love You.
Fantastic. I love it. God bless her.
That's very Fiona Apple of her.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah. The new the song we're going to play is called Man.
Man.
And man, was that a fun episode, Chris. Thank you for extrapolating on Pretty Good House and defining the undefinable.
Hey, thank you for listening to me drone on and delicious cocktails.
Cheers. Rock out, Nico. Hey, do it again.
All right. I'm liking it. Let's do it.
Cheers.